Now, 6 years after her mother's death, Mary Donovan discovered she had twin siblings among the missing children of Besborough, and discovered much more as well. Mary, good morning. And when you look back at everything you've discovered about your mother's life, where do you even begin to tell that story? I'll leave that to you.
Well, I have to go back to 2015 when I applied for her psychiatric records for St. Finian's, and I went from there onwards then. And then a year after, she was alive when the apology came out for the Magdalene Laundries. We weren't aware of the family, but the older brother that's now deceased was. So when he died a year later, he was born in Besborough in 57. I took up the kind of the torch and proceeded with the process. So in November 2020, I got a report from the Restorative Justice Department, and there in that report it says she had two entries into Besborough, 1957 at 17 and 1959 at 19, where she gave birth to the twins Anne Veronica and Vincent Joseph Finn.
Okay, what did you know about your mother's time in the institutions when you were growing up?
Well, I was put into an institution myself. I was put into an industrial school at the age of one through a court order to be certified and detained until the age of 16. They held on to me until I was 18 and a half. So I spent all my, obviously my babyhood, my early childhood, my teens in an institution myself. Mum would come along with my older brother and my older sister at the time, and my younger brother Martin followed in 1970 at 2 weeks old. He was put in with us as well, but when he was 10 he was moved down to Clonmel Ferry House, and that I came home from school one day and I had asked the nun, where's my younger brother? Well, I was told basically to mind my business and that he was sent to Tipperary. Now, having been institutionalised all my life, I didn't have a clue where Tipperary was. But Mum would come up and visit. I suppose someone was saying before, how did you know she was your mother? Obviously, there were three Donovans in the home at that stage. And the nun would come to the dining hall and say, your mother's in the parlour. So I would stay sitting until the older sister and the older brother would stand up. And then someone else would say, sure, Donovan. So I'd go up. But the nun was always present. But Mum had a very tough life. She was her institution. She fought TB in 1951. In 1951, she was only 12. She spent December 51 to June 53 in fines, recovering from TB. And then she, from the records I have, she was in a Magdalene Laundry here in Limerick from 52 up to 55. Obviously got out. And then a court order was put in place in Tralee District Court to have her sent up to Limerick to be detained in a reformatory school. A lot of mothers were in the mother and baby homes were under this reformatory act. It was like a boisterous school for girls. It's very, very, it's not been discussed enough. Like Letterfack and Dunyan is very popular for the boys, but there were two. Girls, and the oldest one was the one St. Joseph's in Limerick that was opened in 1858, and Mammy was put in there in 1955, just a week after her 16th birthday, and they held on. That would have been under the justice system, so she would have been classed as a parolee, so she would have been under their care from the age of 16 up to 19, but in 1941 they upped the age to 21. So if she did get out and she misbehaved, she would have been picked up and put into, she was in three Magdalene Laundries also. She was in Limerick and she was in Sunday as well.
So your mum is Margaret, right?
And my mum is Margaret Mary, yeah.
So she's obviously been passed from pillar to post in the supposed care of the state. When did you first realise there was much more to her story than you'd been told?
When I started digging in more, when the Restorative Justice came back and said that the nuns had only records for her for about 8 months. But then I had received her psychiatric records through FOI in 2015. And in those files, there was two letters. And one was where she, after being put into St. Joseph's in 55, she obviously came out and was put into St. Finian's psychiatric at the age of 16 in April of 56 for observations, because they diagnosed her with dementia, which is apparently a learning difficulties and stuff, and wayward, unsocial behaviour, locked into an asylum at 16 years of age into a mental home.
So getting access to her records, Mary. You know, that's a good thing, but it must have been harrowing to see what she went through.
It was harrowing. I got them in 2000. Look, I know Mom is, she's definitely guiding me, because I was in an office and I was typing away on my own, and I got this whisper in my ear, FOI. Now, I didn't know what that was at the time, and I typed it into the system, and I felt, you know what, I'm going to get Mom's records. So I did. I fought a hard battle. They didn't want to give them to me, so I had to take it up to the, you know, the Consumer Affairs Office in Dublin, the legal side. So they did release. I got two massive, large leverage folders back to back from her psychiatric, files from St. Finian's, and in there it stated she was in St. Joseph's in Limerick. She was in Our Lady of the Road as well. It's sad for her that the day we were taken from the family home in Tralee. On the 19th of December, 1969, she was actually in Lee Road, and they transferred her back to Finian's the day after. So she was totally unaware that I was the baby at the time, because a baby prior to me died in September of 69, 5 months old. I mean, like, she went through postnatal depression, obviously. She went through the loss of a baby. In the last couple of years, I've searched to see with my other siblings. So all in all, there were 10 birth certs that I found. And I'm the only one alive at the moment. Well, there's another baby that was born in 1972, but I haven't done any search on him. They used her maiden name, even though she was married.
Yeah, but you learned that Margaret, your mother, had twins at Bessborough. Here in Cork in 1959. What was it like to learn you had a brother and sister you'd never even known about?
I was devastated, because by then I had lost two brothers at that stage in 2015 and 2016, the youngest and the oldest. So when I discovered about the twins in November of 2020 in that report, I then started searching, applying for death certs, applying for birth records. I looked up a load of the graveyards and, you know, the caretakers. So I was at the commemorative event in 2021 in Bessborough, and they let me speak. And I met with, I think it was Olin Ring, and he said he could help me. So he got someone from Cork City Council to check many of the graveyards around the confines of Bessborough, and 17 of them were checked, and not one burial record for Anne or Vincent Joseph was found in those 17 graveyards.
So it's Anne Veronica and Vincent Joseph. And are you certain that they'd passed or could possibly be alive? What do you know about them?
I know nothing. And from what they're saying, there's a death cert, there's a birth cert, and there's a death cert. And the deaths were registered before the birth cert was registered.
And not even given the dignity of a named grave?
A named grave or a burial, yeah. So it has been tough, because I've lost my sister in 2022 and the last of the siblings last year, a year ago. The three of their anniversaries is this month. So this week is a fairly tough week for me. So basically I'm on my own, and I will keep advocating for Bessborough. We need to have that land CPO'd, and I would like to be able to have a place to come where, you know, a memorial remembrance garden would be lovely, with the 923 little crosses with their names, because they all had a name. They all have birth certs and death certs, and the 19 mothers also. We cannot forget them.
Your mother Margaret was on a veritable Irish tour of care institutions and 10 pregnancies. What level of care do you believe the state offered to Margaret?
They offered her nothing. She received ECT, electric convulsive therapy, at the age of 17. And now that went on for, my mother was spent in and out of St. Finian's for over 40 years, in and out between the other five sites. She was in St. Brendan's, Grange Gorman. And while under the Reformatory Act, if she was in Grange Gorman, I used the word trafficked, because I think Pat was too light a word. She was put down to Finian's. They'd recognise her on the system. if she was in Mountjoy, because she would have been, it would have been under, you know, like saying pass back in the old days for the boys.
Yep.
There wasn't anything for girls, but the one in Limerick was. And if they misbehaved after the detention ceased, they were sent into mental asylums under the Lunacy Act. And a lot of girls, and I think that's what happened, Mammy. That's what happened. That's how she ended up in St. Finian's at 16 when she came out of the reformatory.
Mary, you're outlining what I can only feel is a generational legacy of pain for one family. How has it affected you and your extended family?
Well, how has it affected me? Well, I was institutionalised. I'm intergenerational. My father was also a survivor of the industrial schools, so it was both parents. My aunts were in the same industrial school as I was in the 40s, and I entered in there in the late 60s. It was a horrific childhood. I undertook the 51 day hunger strike, the 51 nights camped out above Dublin. Right now, my physical health and psychological and mental state isn't great. The triggers of the childhood trauma of being in the dark.
51 day hunger strike, that's putting you close to death. We're losing you there, Mary. Can you just move around just slightly?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's much better, yeah.
Yeah. There were two of us that never went home. We were up there for the whole 52 nights. We were like, we were forgotten about. We were left out in those dark elements. No one came to check on us late at night. The government didn't interact for 25 days, but we held our ground. And the hunger strike ended on the 10th of November with a commitment letter signed by Antishik himself. I have that here, with services and support. And unfortunately, many of the supports are not in place. We are still engaging with the government. It's very sad because our healing is very slow. You know, in particular with myself and Mary Dunleavy Green, who never left that camp. We stayed up there, up those 51 nights. I have a weeping ear. I've been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis because of the hunger strike. But look, I had to do it. We were promised these lifelong services in the state apology of 1999, and it never happened. Many groups did sit around the table with, you know, different governments and got nothing. But we had no choice but to take this stance. And they were put on notice last July the 1st of 2025 that there would be a pending hunger strike. And starvation meant nothing to me. I ended up having an eating disorder, an anorexia through childhood abuse, sexual abuse and molestation that was done to me. So not eating didn't faze me.
Did that abuse take place within the institutions?
Yes, it took place with older girls, the inmates that we were called. The older girls were abusers too.
Inmates are prisoners.
That's what we were kind of known as, inmates, in the industrial school. But when I went up to redress, I didn't go confidential. I said, I'll go up to the board. They treated me inhumanely. I was cross-examined by 7 or 8 different people. There was persons from the church. There was the solicitors. It was a horrific experience. But I went up there. I mentioned my abusers. I was told to go to the Gardaí. I followed every protocol. And I was boarded out at the age of 12 to a wealthy family for the summer holidays, the Easter holidays, the winter holidays, for an au pair, free nanny, free housekeeper, non-paid, till 12 up till I was 17. And he abused me over 6 years. And when I went to the detectives and lodged my complaint, he's residing in the UK now. They did go over, they said, but they phoned me in 2006 and told me he was dying. But I got the shock of my life a week after I came off the hunger strike to discover he's actually still alive. And that has caused me severe trauma. I'm in therapy. I am. I'm in ongoing therapy. Have been for many years. But the hunger strike exasperated an awful lot of my physical ailments and my psychological trauma.
It would, and you'd carry that for the rest of your life. There are a lot of people listening to you right now, Mary, who would not have been alive during the period you went through. How would you explain to them, to let them understand what happened?
Well, while we were, it was the ISPCC, who were the hand of the law under the government, that took me from my family home because I was poor and lack of parental guardianship. I was a 1-year-old little girl. It doesn't happen now, but a lot of our history is sanitized because while we were on the hunger strike, we did a petition. We met a lot of young students from Trinity College and UCD, and they couldn't find anything on our history. So the only thing we could tell them was go and look up the Justice Sean Ryan report, the 5 volumes, and they came back and thanked us for it. A lot of young people were upset and distraught, you know, that this had happened, because the last school only closed in 1996. That's not too long ago. I left in 1986. I went in 69, came out in 86. The childhood was horrific. The beatings, the punishments, they were systemic across the board. But I think once, you know, when you go in as a one-year-old, you're already conditioned. And you're in tuned into the regime. You don't know any different. Like, I saw children coming in as teens, young babies coming in, and I felt so sorry and so sad, because I never had a birthday in there, so I didn't know what age I was.
I think the word you were looking for in the middle of all that there, Mary, was institutionalised. I know it's a tough word for you to listen to.
It is. Yeah, I was institutionalised. Yeah, all throughout my whole childhood and all into my late teens. I only got to enjoy 1 year of my teen that was 19 in March. I left in September.
Have you happy memories of your childhood at all?
No, I don't. The first memory of being getting beaten was I was about 4. I was in the school. We did go to the school attached. It was in the compound of the industrial school. And I was, you know, I just asked the teacher, could I go to the bathroom? And I went down the corridor and I passed the principal's office, and the nun in charge of the home was in there. But I took no notice. I went off and went to go to the bathroom. But when I went back up to the institution at lunchtime, because I was only a little junior at that time, I was asked why was I on the corridor at the school. And I said I wanted to go to the toilet. So she made me sit on the toilet from 1 o'clock until 6 o'clock that evening, until the rosary bell rang for me to come off the toilet and go down and then kneel down and say the rosary. We prayed in the morning. We got out of bed. We prayed all day, every day. You know, the religion was just pumped into us like it was just...
When I think of young and innocent children being, you know, the victims and the punch bags for sexual repression or religious repression or whatever...
Yeah.
Whatever these people were foisting upon you, it's just very hard to imagine. If I could get back to Besborough for a second, why is preserving the Besborough site so important to you, and what would a proper memorial there be?
Well, it is important to me because, like, I mean, I know where my other siblings are buried. I can visit their graves down in Kerry. I have nowhere to go see where to visit Anne and Vincent. And Besborough... The sites that are left, I mean, like, look, it was 250 originally. They sold it. I was on your show a few weeks ago. They sold 150 to the N5 at the back that was built. So, you know, the babies were probably scattered all over the place. But what's left needs to be preserved. I would like to be able to come up in my own time and have access to maybe a fountain. I don't know. Do you know, like, a wish, you know, you'd wait. There's fountains where you put little pennies or something in and surround it with, like, angels or something. Because the day I was up there this year, the 28th of June, I was very emotional. It caught me so hard because I was sitting there and the trees were rattling. And I said to my friend Mary Dunleavy, she came up to support me, I said, I'm going to get upset here now. I said, the angels are here, but we don't know where they are. And that's why it's important that we CPO and preserve what's left. Give us that, you know, because there are 923 missing and two of them are my siblings. And I'll keep talking about it and talking my story until someone picks it up. I mean, you're very good. Yeah. You've had me on the show a few times.
You're more than welcome. But what you're saying is give us what's left. That's the least we deserve.
And a little memorial garden and... I acknowledged the 19 mothers. The other reason on the 28th that caught me was there was actually a mother that died there in 1927, my name, Mary Donovan. And right beside that stone was Caroline Donovan. And it was just, I was meant to be there that day because my sister Caroline Donovan passed 4 years ago. It was just, you know, I was meant to be there, and I will do anything and everything I can to fight for Bowsprit to be preserved and kept the last 60 acres, and I appreciate you. Okay. And in Mom's memory as well.
Let me ask you a question about your so-called guardians and protectors. Do you feel the state has ever had an open ear or ever even genuinely listened to survivors? And what do you still want from the state and the government?
We want proper medical treatment. I was in there for 17 and a half years and never saw a dentist, never saw a GP. I suffered horrendously from tonsillitis, was never treated. We have asked for some of the services of the HA that cover a lot more dental than the normal medical care that they're giving us, which is not what we agreed to. We had a really legal representative that night with us. The liaison officers are not in place right now for health. I'm setting up a meeting at the moment for next week for the Limerick Clare and Tipperary region to bring survivors together. We cannot leave them behind. There are survivors out there that never went to school, can't read, but they do listen to your radio show. There are supports and forms to be. You can get them on the website at the residential board, and it's for the supports that were promised to us 9 months ago that are still not in place. And it's that we're still engaging with the government. There was mediation. We're actually mentally and physically exhausted. We'll still continue to engage because at the end of the day, if we don't, we're not going to get what we fought hard for. We did nearly die myself and Mary Dunleavy Green to come out with nothing for what we fought hard for.
Mary, the current redress scheme is 2 years old. The state is now actively advertising in press and on radio and the media to get more people involved. I've learned that there's 800 million put aside there and only 80 million has been applied for. Are you and others you know involved or interested in applying under that redress scheme?
Well, I think, you know, like my mom, we didn't know about Mammy being in the Magdalen laundries or the mother and baby home. It was only when this report came out in 2020. So she died obviously in 2015. They're now saying anyone that died pre these apologies shouldn't be entitled. I feel the family members of that deceased mother, it should go to them, because, you know, she's my mother. She was denied the reformatory redress because we didn't know she was in a reformatory school, so she got no justice there either, because all this came out in this interdepartmental report in November of 2020. We knew not. It was never on our records in the redress, in our files. Yes, they called her all the horrible names. They called her that she was berserk, unfit, she was schizophrenic, she was retarded. It's just...
They electric shocked her at 17, for God's sake.
Yeah, they labelled her with disgusting labels, like, you know, she was an innocent 16-year-old that went in because apparently she was pulling her hair out. She was, and why didn't someone just say, Margaret Mary, why are you pulling your hair out, instead of locking her into a psychiatric? And after the twins were born and they died, they moved her into Sundayswell, and then she was moved from Sundayswell back to St. Finian's in October of 1959 and remained there until March 22nd. 1963. So not alone, like, after losing another, like, her babies, they locked her away for another 4 years, and then she met my father. They got married within 4 weeks, and there was six or seven of us born. She lost two babies within that marriage. One was 9 weeks old, and Michael was five. Like, it's been one tragedy after another. Like, she didn't deserve it. And she is my mom at the end of the day, and my mom gave me life, and I loved my mom in the way that I needed to love my mum.
She was passed around, you know, like a parcel. She was abused.
Yes.
She had 10 pregnancies, many miscarriages, I imagine. Infant deaths.
Pregnancies, multiple miscarriages. So I can only find it's her for 10. So, look, she was locked away for 4 years, and she was given ECTs, thousands. I mean, over the years. Before she died, she'd only 12 little teeth in her mouth, God bless her. She died from dementia. She got diagnosed with dementia in 2008. And I feel that dementia was caused by the ECT and the insulin shock therapy that she endured at such a young age and throughout her life, you know? Why don't we send a message to her, Mary?
Why don't we send a message to her? Why don't we let the last words of the interview here be you? You sending a message to Margaret Mary? She was your mother. If you could speak to her now, what would you say?
She would be very proud. And I always say it. I always had my mom active in my own children's lives. She used to light up when she'd see my children as little babies, and like she's my hero. And she's my warrior. And I think that's where I get my strength and resilience is from her. And I will love her till obviously the day I die. And I miss her terribly. You know, she was my mom. She gave me life. But what was done to her was the state and church and the psychiatrics. They were all involved in it. You know, she was a beautiful woman. To take the love of her mind away, that, you know, that love in your sensory, in your mind. She couldn't love us because she didn't know how to, because they took it away from her. But she knew I loved her, and I would always say to her when I visited her in the nursing home, she knew me, and I'd say, I'd love you, Mom, and she'd say, I love you too. And I had her up at my home over the years before she passed on little holidays, because, you know, she used to get excited. She was, because she was in after St. Finian's closed its doors in 95, she was put into a high dependency unit in Tralee. And I used to go there quite a lot. I have a lot of memories. I've got a lot of pictures. But she's my hero. She's my warrior.
And thanks, Mary.
I think I get that from her. And thank you very much for giving me the time.
Mary Donovan, I won't say it's been a pleasure talking to you because of the subject we've covered.
No, thank you. It has certainly been an honour. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mary Donovan, good morning. Thanks.
Good morning to you. Bye.